Excuse me, everyone. We now have our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your line is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Credit Corp's Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Fernando Dasso. Mr. Dasso, please begin.
Good morning and welcome to the Credit Corp's conference call on our earnings results for the third quarter of 2016. Before we review Credit Corp's performance in the third quarter, I would like to take a few minutes to review the Peruvian macroeconomic environment. Overall, we believe that the macroeconomic environment will be better in the coming year compared to a year ago. The balance of risk has improved. Certain risks have dissipated. Third, the Nino phenomenon was not disruptive. Second, the outcome of the presidential elections has boosted business and consumer optimism. Third, experts estimate that in 2017, export prices could increase for the first time in 6 years. Fourth, the Fed rate is expected to increase only gradually. And finally, after 3 years, cost adjustment is not the main priority for firms in the real sector in Peru. Nonetheless, we remain vigilant of the challenges that the new government has to face. Regarding economic growth, recently the government established a legal limit on spending at the ministry with the objective of reaching the fiscal deficit target of 3% of GDP. This adjustment could affect domestic demand, which is still weak. In this context, Congress granted legislative powers to the executive branch for a legal period of 90 days. The most important measures will involve VAT and corporate income tax changes, among others. Between January and August, the trade balance posted a trade deficit of $217 million, which was considerably below the $2,600 million deficit registered for the same period last year. The solid performance of traditional products led by copper exports and more sluggish than expected imports of raw materials and capital goods explain this result. Hence, in 2017, we expect a trade balance slight surplus, the first since 2013. As you can see in the chart at the bottom of this page on the right-hand side, the market shares our optimism, and as a result, 5-year Peruvian CDS are closing in on 2 years from Chile. The spread between both is the narrowest in the history despite Chile's higher credit rating. In sum, some risks have dissipated and we remain cautiously optimistic about next year. Next page, please. Regarding our quarterly financial performance, in this third quarter, Credit Corp posted a historical record for quarterly net income, which totaled $949 million. After deducting the translation loss of $2 million, recurring net income was $952 million. This figure represented recurring ROE and ROA of 20.8% and 2.4% respectively. The group's excellent performance this quarter is even more noteworthy in the context of a slowdown in loan growth. Credit Corp results have begun to reflect the benefits of the strategic projects in which we have been highly focused, particularly those related to improved risk quality of our loan book. Even though we will continue working on these points, we feel better prepared to capture the potential that exists in the Peruvian market as soon as the economy fully recovers its pace of growth, particularly in terms of investment and internal demand. The third quarter's results show, first, quarter-end loan balances expanded 2.9% QoQ and 7.4% year-over-year. Currency-adjusted growth rates were 1.5% QoQ and 5.1% year-over-year. This evolution shows better dynamism in middle market banking, BCP Bolivia, mortgage, SME business, SME PYME, and Milanco. Second, Next provision for loan losses decreased 19.6% year-over-year and 12.5% year-over-year. This was due to a contraction in gross provisions for loan losses, which in turn reflects an improvement in the portfolio's risk quality and an increase in the level of recovery and reversals. As a result, the cost of risk fell 46 basis points Q-over-Q, reaching 1.65%, which is the lowest level reported in the last 3 years. Third, net interest income grew 2.9% Q-over-Q and 5% year-over-year. The increase this quarter was mainly generated by better interest income on loans and, to a lesser extent, interest income on trading securities. As a result, NIM recovered 18 basis points quarter-over-quarter, which reduced the contraction year-over-year to only 12 bps. The improvement in net interest income and the lower level of provisions allowed NIM after provisions to recover even more. As such, this ratio increased 43 basis points Q-over-Q and 11 basis points year-over-year. Fourth, the efficiency ratio was situated at 43.8%, which represented a decrease of 10 bps Q-over-Q, but an increase of 80 bps year-over-year. Let's review all these financial figures in more detail. Next page, please. On this page, you can see the evolution of the loan book in quarter-end and average daily balances. It is better to focus the analysis on average daily balances because they are more important. They are an important driver of net interest income and NIM. The Q-over-Q analysis shows that average daily balances expanded only 1%. Nevertheless, they posted a slight contraction of 0.1% in currency-adjusted terms. Thus, the loan book continues reflecting a low-growth scenario this year. In this context, some business segments posted slightly better dynamism, such as middle market banking, BCP Bolivia, and mortgage, and to a lesser extent, Yuanco, SME business, and SME Pink. It's worth noting that middle market banking's loan book expanded 2.8% after having contracted two consecutive quarters. Along the same lines, the mortgage segment grew 1.8% Q-over-Q after registering virtually no growth in the previous quarter. On the contrary, corporate banking's loan book contracted 2.9% Q-over-Q due to lower credit demand and more competition. The year-over-year analysis reveals that nominal and currency-adjusted growth rates were 7.9% and 5.9% respectively. These rates reflect the slowdown in loan growth, which is even clearer when we compare to the year-over-year growth rates of 16.8% and 9.8% posted in the first and second quarters of this year, respectively. Low loan expansion is even clearer in the year-to-date analysis. Average daily balances posted nominal and currency-adjusted growth rates of 3% and 3.4%, respectively. In terms of loan mix, the evolution of the loan book this quarter shows slightly higher growth rates in business segments with higher margins, which in turn has helped relieve downward pressure on NIM, as we will explain later on. Next page, please. The de-dollarization process continued, but at a slower pace than BCP. In the case of Credicorp, as you can see in the chart at the top, as of September 2016, 39.8% of its loan book was denominated in foreign currency, a level lower than the 42.2% posted in the third quarter of 2015, but slightly higher than the 38.6% reported in the previous quarter. The latter is mainly a result of higher loan growth in BCP Bolivia. BCP standalone recorded an even lower level of dollarization, which was 36.9% at the end of September, slightly above the 35.6% at the end of June, but below the 40.2% of the third quarter of 2015. Overall, as you can see in the chart on the bottom right-hand side, the level of foreign exchange risk and credit risk has remained stable for the past two quarters, falling 1% in the third quarter of this year. Next page, please. As you see in the table at the top of this page, net interest income increased 9% Q2 and 5% year-over-year due to growth in interest income that offset the increase in interest expenses. On the income side, interest income on loans was the most important driver, and to a lesser extent, interest income on trading securities. The former is attributable to better dynamism in some business segments and to seasonality in others. The aforementioned translated into a recovery of 18 basis points Q-over-Q in NIM. This meant that the year-over-year decline was only 12 basis points, which is lower than the 51 basis point reduction reported last quarter. The most significant improvement was posted in NIM after provisions, which, after a year of dropping continuously, increased 43 and 11 basis points Q-over-Q and year-over-year respectively. Next page, please. On this page, you can see credit card funding structure and some important indicators related to it. Credit card funding costs increased 13 basis Q-over-Q due to higher funding costs in the banking subsidiary and at BCP standalone and Mibanco in particular. BCP standalone accounts for more of the increase. The increase in BCP's funding cost is due mainly to, first, an increase in local currency funding's share of total funding. As you can see in the bar chart, local currency funding represented 48% of total funding at the end of September, compared to 45% in the previous quarter. Second, the reduction in volumes in foreign currency funding is explained by the contraction of foreign currency deposits, which have the lowest funding cost of all foreign currency funding sources. In fact, the costs associated with foreign currency deposits are even lower than those associated with local currency funding sources. Thus, overall the funding cost increased because of a recomposition this quarter, even though the funding cost by source remains stable or even fell for some funding sources. Finally, the overall loan-to-deposit ratio increased and reached 106%. This was a result of a contraction in deposits, which is in turn associated with a drop in deposits from institutional and corporate clients, mainly in foreign currency. The local currency loan-to-deposit ratio continued to drop and situated at 144%, which is lower than the 152% posted the previous quarter. Next page. In terms of portfolio quality, in the third quarter, all risk quality ratios improved. The cost of risk declined 46 basis points, reaching 165%, the lowest level recorded in the last 3 years. The internal overdue ratio and non-performing ratio decreased 6 and 3 basis points respectively. The exceptional improvement in the cost of risk was due mainly to a decrease in provisions for loan losses, net of recoveries and reversals, which showed 19.6% Q-over-Q. This in turn was due primarily to, first, lower gross provisions at BCP, BCP Bolivia and Mibanco, due mainly to an improvement in portfolio quality, and second, an increase in the level of recoveries and reversals at BCP. Let's review in more detail the evolution of the cost of risk by business segment. Next page, please. As you can see in the chart, all business segments, with the exception of SME business, posted a reduction in their cost of risk, which led to a significant drop in the overall cost of risk at Credicorp, despite a context of low loan growth. Also, banking's cost of risk fell due to reversals of provisions in corporate banking and to recovery in the written-off portfolio in middle market banking. BCP Bolivia posted a reduction of cost of risk that was mainly driven by lower provisions and high loan growth rate. The former is related to better risk quality of new vintages after the delinquency problem that started in 2014 due to a change in regulation that we have explained at point in time. With regards to retail banking business segments, first, mortgage portfolio posted a lower cost of risk, not only because of loan growth, but also because of less provision required. The latter is due to lower level of provisions related to the duration of clients in our financial institutions and to delinquency showed in our BCP stocks, which in the previous quarters explained most of the provisions that we made. Furthermore, the vivienda program has required a lower level of loan losses provisions than the registered in previous quarters. It is important to keep in mind that the existence of collateral does not allow us to show the improvement just described in the delinquency ratios because we cannot write off the provision loans until we finish the foreclosure process. Second, SME PYME also reduced its cost of risk as a result of better risk quality of new vintages. In this business segment, cost of risk fell for 53 bps year over year, which is the most appropriate analysis to eliminate the seasonality effect. The positive trend is also shown in the lower early delinquency ratio that is already low for this type of business, but it reduced 3 bps year over year. Third, SME business is the only segment where cost of risk went up. Nevertheless, it is important to note that this indicator is already relatively low and reached a very low and unusual level in the previous quarter. Finally, let's review in more detail the risk indicators for the credit card and consumer loan segment, where we are diligently working to manage the increasing delinquency reported in the last quarter of 2016. Next page, please. The figures on this slide show the evolution of the delinquency ratios and cost of risk in the credit card and consumer credit segments, both of which have posted an upward trend since the last quarter of 2015. In the case of credit cards, delinquency ratios and the cost of risk fell. In this segment, we have made significant changes in the risk policy and have been posting positive results, although loan origination has slowed down significantly. We remain cautiously optimistic about this first positive sign, although a downward trend may have started. In the case of consumer loans, delinquency ratios continue going up, but at a slower pace. However, cost of risk fell significantly. Next page, please. Non-financial income contracted Q-over-Q due to the effect of a non-recurring gain on the sale of the 50% of the investment in BCI, which was reported in the previous quarter. In recurring terms, non-financial income grew 8% Q-over-Q due to an increase in earnings generation in all categories. The year-over-year evolution shows an increase of 13.4% that was mainly attributable to higher levels of gains on certain securities and fee income, which offset the contraction in gains on foreign exchange transactions. Next page, please. The insurance underwriting result fell only 1% Q-over-Q due to higher acquisition costs and increasing claims for life insurance, which offset the increase in net earned premiums. Year over year, the underwriting result grew 6.6% due to an increase in net earned premiums, mainly in property and casualty, which outpaced the slight increase in claims and in the acquisition costs. In this context, the combined ratio fell 38%, while the loss ratio was stable at 57%. Next page, please. In terms of operating efficiency, the efficiency ratio was situated at 43.8%, which represented a decrease of 10 bps Q/Q. Although our control over and governance of operating expenses continues to be highly efficient, income generation has been lower than expected. Thus, the cost to income ratio increased 80 bps year-over-year. Next page, please. In terms of capital ratios, at the end of September, we reached a level of 10.64% in the Common Equity Tier 1 ratio, as a result of a higher level of retained earnings, which in turn reflects the net income generated in the third quarter. Next page, please. In the chart on this page, you can see all of our subsidiaries' contributions to Credicorp. In the third quarter, Credicorp posted a 20.8% recurrent ROE, which mainly reflects the excellent performance of PCP and Mibanco and the stability of our subsidiaries. Furthermore, the results of this quarter allowed Credicorp to post a 10.9% increase in net income year to date, which represents a new higher growth rate of 16.1% in the recurring net income. Thus, recurring ROE and ROA reach 19.5% and 2.2% respectively. Finally, year-to-date recurring net income amounted to 2.5 billion soles, which represents a recurring ROE of 19.5%. With these comments, I would like to open the Q&A session, please. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key, that is star one, on your touchtone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please just press star 2. Again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question. Our first question comes from Carlos Macedo from Goldman Sachs.
Good morning, Fernando. Thanks for taking questions. Congrats on the solid results. First question is on your cost of risk, obviously a lot stronger, a lot better sequentially than I think most of us expected. And you went through a very thorough explanation during your presentation. A couple of questions, one question there. It does seem there's some seasonality in the consumer side. Obviously, the wholesale cost of risk was negative. We don't expect that to be sustained. What would you call your sustainable cost of risk going forward? In looking back, I think you only posted a sub-2 cost of risk twice over the last 3 or 4 years. Is sub-2 something that we should grow accustomed to, or is this going to migrate back to 2? Considering the recoveries, which are also very strong this quarter. Second question on funding. The funding costs went up. You migrated more to local currency deposits. What's the outlook here? Is that was demand based, or are you trying to push out more sol based deposits, or is that something your clients asked for more? And so as a result, we might see a bigger shift to that kind of deposit going forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Carlos. First, I'm going to address your second question in terms of deposits. What is happening really is that our currency is more stable compared to the dollar. So some deposits are shifting from dollars into soles. And as you can imagine, rates in soles are higher than in dollars. So, we are in a way paying a little more for solid deposits than dollar deposits, but on the other hand, it is better to have those solid deposits in some way because we can balance a little better our balance sheet. Because as you know, we have more loans in solid than deposits in solid, and that balance is already shifting in the right way towards equilibrium. So those are good news.
If you don't mind, Fernando, just a question there. Obviously, what we saw also was the central bank instruments went down in the quarter, and I suppose a migration to the deposits in soles. Which one is more expensive, the instruments or the deposits?
No, the instruments are always more expensive. The instrument, the central bank instruments, which account for around 10 billion soles, are, you know, most of them are in market terms, the rate. Whereas in soles, we see the whole set of deposits in soles. Most of them are demand and saving deposits that have very, very favorable rates for us.
Okay,
then addressing your first question in terms of seasonality of our cost of risk and what should happen to our cost of risk. As you know, in previous quarters, we have always been giving that signaling that our cost of risk should be from 2 to 2.2%. We are surprised with this 165%. And we feel that it is a result of mainly two things. First, that we have been working thoroughly in terms of risk for many quarters now, and we, in a way, feel that results are beginning to show, and we are getting better results because we have made important decisions in terms of risk, trying to choose the best clients in each segment, improving our the way in which we underwrite and the way in which we collect and the whole risk process, especially in retail banking. But again, we don't know what's going to happen in the future. We feel it's safer to say that we will, you know, probably be better than 2%, but we don't know exactly. We still need to see some quarters or what happens in the next quarter. We still need to see what happens to the competition, how is the shelf of the whole system, because these good news are still very early news that we need to confirm in the coming months.
Okay, thank you, Fernando.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Tito Labarta from Deutsche Bank.
Hi, good morning, Fernando. Thanks for the call. A couple of questions also. First, on your margin, we saw some good margin expansion in the quarter, although your loan margin was kind of flattish. So just want to understand how you see your margin evolving going forward. We did see a pickup also, you know, in SME lending where wholesale lending was a bit slower. So I don't know if that helped at all, or just given the kind of the loan growth and the different segments that you're seeing, and also, you know, with kind of better funding, you know, how you see your margin can evolve going forward, if there's any more upside. And then my second question is in terms of capital. We've seen your Core Tier 1 ratio, you know, rise significantly over the last couple of years, now at 10.6. With this level of profitability and this level of loan growth, you're likely going to continue to generate more capital. So you just want to get a sense, you know, what do you think about kind of the use of this capital? I saw something about a new dividend policy. Do you think you know, the dividend will be higher, or you know, can growth pick up, or could you start looking for acquisitions? Just want to get a better sense of, you know, how you think about this capital ratio and expectations for, you know, continuing to generate capital and how that will be deployed. Thank you.
Thank you, Tito, for the questions. First, in terms of what will happen with the expansion of the portfolio, as we have discussed many times, we think that this year is really a transitional year in many ways. It's been a year where we've done with that threat of El Niño phenomenon, then with the presidential elections. Those two things are really behind, and we receive good news in terms of both things. Now we feel that the country should regain growth, although we are growing, and this year we'll probably approach a GDP growth of 4%. Next year, the country should improve in many ways, and we are still waiting for that investment, private investment to come, and the growth to regain momentum. If that happens, we will continue growing, and our margins should expand. What is happening in wholesale? Two things. First, the country is growing less, so there is less demand for those loans. And when you see less demand, there is more competition for the best clients. and that is showing especially in our corporate banking segment. We feel that that should improve if the country regains its growth in the coming future. In terms of the other segments, we feel that they should continue growing, but if you remember some years ago, we had growth rates of around 25% a year, 20% a year, when the GDP was growing by 6-7%. Now it's different. We feel that this year, this next year, we'll probably grow by around 8%, 9%. This 2016 will probably be around 6%. What should happen is that is the path that retail should be regain some growth compared to wholesale. For the last 3 years, wholesale was really needing growth. Now retail should regain some growth and in a way balance the growth of the whole portfolio. Then in terms of capital, yes, since our ROE is around 20%, and growth is around, say, 7-8%, depending on if it is this year or next, yes, we'll have some excess capital. And as you know, we're always actively looking for investment opportunities, that we have learned from the lessons of the past that we should, I mean, if we grow different alternatives that open, we will be very cautious on how will we do it. So if there is excess capital, now I assume that our shareholders will plan to receive their dividends. And that's what we are looking for. We are actually deciding on what's going to happen at the end of this year if we continue in this path. But our sense is that we will pay the dividends that we have excess capital.
Thanks, Fernando. That's helpful. Just a couple quick follow-ups. So first, just if I understood correctly, retail lending kind of looking to pick up a bit and more competition in wholesale, so that could mean that margins should expand just given the loan mix shifting towards more higher-yielding loans. And then following up on the dividend, so how should we think about the dividend? I think the new dividend policy that I saw recently says at least 25%. Is that a level of dividend, or could it be even higher than that, you know, I don't know, 30, 40, just kind of getting a sense of what the payout ratio could be given the excess capital?
Okay, first on the dividends, as you know, during the last 3 years, we've been actually building capital at the BCP level. So dividends have been, the dividend rate at BCP has been for some years 20%, then last year was already 42%, but at Credit Corp it continued to be 25% for some, the last 3-4 years. Now we're going to have to see what we reach at the end of this year, but we will probably pay more than 25%. As you know, we have some buffers at the, since we operate in a very volatile country, or volatile countries really, we have some buffers of capital at the Credit Corp level. We have around $280 million right now, and we will probably bring that figure a little bit up, maybe $100 million more. And but after that, if we don't find any important opportunities for growth, we will pay the dividends. That's what I've been gathering from our board.
Thanks, that's helpful. And just to follow up on the margin, just the shift towards maybe more retail lending again, it does imply upside for margins. Is that correct?
Yeah, some forces operating here. First is, yes, the margins on retail are wider than the margins on wholesale, definitely. But as you know, because of risk reasons, we have been selecting more our clients in the retail arena. So we are actually trying to pick the best clients in each segment. So in a way, margins are reflecting that, definitely. But on the other hand, risk is being led, and we can show that right now in our figures. So that's one thing happening. The second one, especially in Porto, is that if the market begins to grow faster, there will be less competition for the best clients, and that will release or relieve, in a way, some pressure towards margin for the best clients. So there are some, you know, there are some forces operating. We feel that if we regain growth, margins, in a way, will show that being a little less stressed than they are now.
Great, thank you. Very helpful, Fernando.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jason Mullen of Scotiabank.
Yes, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Fernando, my question is on the top down. You talked about the better prospects for 2017 and looking for infrastructure projects to pick up. I mean, GDP growth has been quite strong, I think, relative to some of the other countries in Latin America because of the mining dynamics, and Peru has definitely benefited from that. Going forward, what should we be looking for? What is the bank looking for, the group looking for, in terms of signs that we are seeing a rebound in loan demand activity, economic activity, let's say GDP ex mining? What should we be looking at, and is that really a first half event, or should we be expecting to see that in the second half? And my second question is more of a follow-up on the lower cost of risk net of recoveries. If you can provide some color on the recovery outlook, what happened in this quarter, and if you could see these kinds of recoveries coming in upcoming quarters. Thanks.
Thank you, Jason. The first one, in terms of growth, yes, we are approaching that 4% GDP growth this year in Peru. However, as we have said many times, it's a very tricky growth because internal demand is only growing by 1.3%, 1.4%, and the other part of growth is really a result of many special mining projects coming into production during the last 18 months and reaching full production right now. So driven really by this primary sector rather than internal demand. And we, in our institution, are more focused on what happens with internal demand. What experts are telling us is that internal demand should pick up its pace next year. However, we see that things are still as we began this year with internal demand. However, the government has important plans for growth, for investment. It's really putting into place better conditions. The business sentiment is improving. But as we said in our first page, we are still really vigilant of what should growth be. We feel that right now it should probably pick up in the second quarter or even second half of next year, the economic activity as a whole. Then, in terms of your second question, cost of risk and recovery, I have to tell you that we have been very positively surprised by the results in cost of risk this quarter. And we are talking to our risk people and asking them what has happened. And they tell us it's still premature to tell the market that we are in a different pace. Because this has two main reasons. First is all the measures in terms of risk that we've taken during the last 6 months, 8 months, that are probably showing up. And then, on the other hand, what is really happening to the market itself? We still need to see some more months to understand what has really happened. Is it ourselves, or is it part of what is happening to the whole market? So, yes, the results are good. We hope to keep them where they are, but we still need to see some more months coming to be able to tell you the trend. Or this is
Thank you very
Hello,
much.
Hello, Jason?
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ernesto Galilito from Bank of America.
Hi, good morning, Fernando, and congrats on the results. I have three questions. Follow-up in terms of your NIM, can we expect that an advance in high-yield products should be able to offset soft lending growth and a slightly higher cost of funding? So overall, should we expect stable or improving NIMs going forward? Secondly, regarding your loan delinquency ratio, when do you expect to write down the loan portfolio with real estate collaterals? You have mentioned that this takes about 4 months to improve the fiscal stimulus. Are you hearing something of a 1% reduction on the value-added tax to improve spending in health and education? On the other hand, are you expecting something with public-private associations programs? Thank you.
Thank you. Three questions. The first one is on NIMs going forward. As we said, we feel that now we are under some pressure with margins, especially in the wholesale segment, because of competition, because we are not growing as we did in the past. We feel that if we regain some growth, the whole market, there will be less pressure on NIMs. So NIMs should, in a way, improve. However, NIMs are a consequence of many factors. First of all, we need to see what's going to happen with cost of funding. We feel that the rates in dollars will begin to come up in December, depending on the decision of the Fed. But they should begin gradually to come up, and there will be some pressure there. In solids, we feel that the rates will stay where they are for a while, and then inflation comes up. But inflation, although it's a little higher than the central bank's range, is still under control. That in terms of cost of funding. And in terms of the rate that we can charge our customers, it will definitely depend on competition. We will always try to reprice as fast as possible following the changes in the rates and the funding rate, but it will definitely depend on competition. And now competition is a little bit stringent, especially because we are not going as fast in our portfolio, the whole banking competitors. Then you talked about loan portfolio with collateral, what's going to happen, and you're probably aware that we have an important set of loans that have collateral in real estate, and because of Peruvian regulation, even when we have those loans provisioned by 100%, we cannot charge them off from our loans, from our loan books. Yes, we will continue to have that. We said that the process takes, you need to go through a judicial process, and that takes around 3-4 years, and that will continue to happen. I mean, we have loans that are now under that process, but some loans are getting into that process, beginning that process. So that's something that should continue to happen in the future. When will it stabilize? I feel that it will continue growing, and it will definitely grow at the same pace that our mortgage loan book grows and our SME loan book grows, because those are the main books that have collateral with the loans. So that should continue to happen. And that should be part of your measures. You should understand that. You should also try to always focus on early delinquencies in these particular two segments, because that will give you a better sense a leading sense of what's going to happen with the portfolio in the coming months or years. Then in terms of fiscal stimulus, now the government is really working on that package of measures that we will present first to the Congress and then try it to be approved by the Congress. If that will happen in the coming 13, 40 days. They tell us, yes, that the VAT tax will go down by 100 basis points. That will bring some stimulus. Yes, we feel that that will bring some stimulus, especially for some companies to begin formalizing part of their business, because this is not companies that go from 100% informal to 100% formal. There is always a transition, and yes, in a way, in the coming months, they will begin formalizing part of their business. In terms of stimulus, the business community is waiting for that stimulus, but the government doesn't have a lot of power with them. Especially because the fiscal deficit is around 3.4%. So fiscal stimulus should not, you know, and they are planning to reach 3%. So fiscal stimulus will not be that important, we feel, in the coming months.
Very detailed, Fernando. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Alonso Garcia with Credit Suisse.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. You have mentioned 8-9% loan growth for next year, but I would like to ask you if you see room for more optimistic expectations on loan growth next year if asset quality continues to improve in the following quarters. And my second question would be if you see possible for the company to sustain an ROE above 20% as reported this quarter in the next quarters. Thank you.
About that 8.9% growth, yes, we feel that will be the pace in terms of our loan book. This year, as I said, we will probably reach 5-6%, so it will be a pickup compared to this year. That growth should improve if domestic demand improves. But until we don't see that happening, we'll stick to that 8-9% growth. And the second part of your question was, can you repeat it, please?
Yes, on loan growth, and the first question was if you could see room for more optimistic expectations if asset quality continues to improve. And my second question was on how if the company is able to sustain an ROE level above 20% as the one reported this quarter.
ROE? I think that we will try to stay around 20%. That's the guidance we need all the time. As you know, this year, especially the second quarter, was a little lower than that because of some reasons. Fortunately, we have regained that date in the third quarter, and we still plan to try to reach that 20% during 2016 and in the next year. Those are really our plans and our guidance.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Nia Agarwala from HSBC.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I want to ask on the capital ratio. You have been able to improve your Core Tier 1 significantly, and you have exceeded your target of 10%. What is your target for the medium term, say in the next 3 to 5 years? What is the internal minimum that you operate at, and what is the comfortable level that you see for the business? Thank you so much.
Thank you for your question. In terms of capital, we need to talk about BCP, basically. In terms of just a few words on credit board, we are above the capital we require at credit board. We are around 17% above that capital. But if we go to BCP, which is the most regulated entity, now, as you know, for some months we've been talking about Common Equity Tier 1. 3 years ago, we were in the seventh level, and we decided to build our capital. We have already reached 10.64% in terms of Common Equity Tier 1. We feel that at the end of the year, we will probably be approaching 11%. At our high point, which is February, before we declare dividends, we will be above that 11% level. And we plan next year, when we declare dividends in March, that we will probably bring it down to a little less than 10. And then we will begin, with our internal sources, with net income, continue to build that capital next year. And that should probably be the pace. In the end, we feel that in March 2018, our capital should be at least 10%, and that's a low point. After that, we'll continue building again, and that will happen year by year. That is our outlook right now.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you once again. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. Our next question comes from Thiago Bacita from ITAU BBA.
Fernando, thanks for the opportunity. I have one follow-up about tax rate. With this tax reform in Peru, if I'm not wrong, we will see an increase in the corporate taxes and also a reduction in the tax on dividends. So with these two effects, what is the level of effective income tax that are you expecting for Credit Corp in 2017? Are you expecting to see an increase in the corporate taxes? The second point, second question on Mibanco. The ROE of Mibanco already achieved 23.5% more or less this quarter. Is it possible to see a further improvement in this profitability for Mibanco?
Thank you, Thiago. First one is in terms of tax rate. What we know or gather until now is that, the VAT tax will come down from 19% to 18%, 100 basis points less. And corporate tax, they tell us that it will go up from 28% that we have now to 30%. But on the other hand, it will be balanced because the dividend tax rate, which is now around 6.8%, will come down to 4.1%, to in a way balance what our shareholders or every shareholder is getting into. So until now, that's what we think will happen. We have already put those figures into our projections for next year, but we will know that for sure, as I said, in the coming 30 to 40 days. Then in terms of Mibanco, we've been very positively surprised by their profitability. They are growing very, very, not only fast in terms of their loan book compared to what is happening in the system, but they're also doing very good in terms of profitability. We feel that Mibanco in the coming 2 years should reach around 25% in ROE. It is already around 22%, and you have to remember that it's been only merged since March last year, so it's been only around 18 months. So it's doing very well. As we have said many times, we feel that Mibanco has a world-class product, a world-class business approach to its clients, and they are developing it. There is still ample room for growth for Mibanco. We are actually trying to keep the pace, but be very, again, vigilant and aware that we shouldn't grow as fast as it might be, because there is always risk. And we have learned from many lessons of the past. So Mibanco, in very good pace, it should continue growing, and as I said, ROE should reach around 25% in the coming 2-3 years.
Thanks, and congratulations for the results.
Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I am showing no further questions. I'll now like to turn it back over to Mr. Fernando Dasso for closing remarks.
Thank you very much. As I said previously, we are very positively surprised by the results. However, we are very much aware that we still have many things to do to continue with this good result in the future. As we have said many times, We are a reflection, especially of what happens in the economy of Peru, also of, I mean, Bolivia, Chile, and Colombia in a way, but especially Peru. We have high hopes on this new government, on what it can do in many ways for the country. And we will try to keep that pace. We are prepared in many fronts for growth. As you know, we've been announcing a little bit more of the bank, of BCP, that we've been working on building our capital. We've been working in managing risk, and results are beginning to show there, especially in retail banking risk. We have been working on efficiency, and we still have many fronts in which we are still working and will continue working. I mean, data, digital, and some fronts that are still open for opportunities and improvements. With that, I would just like to close the meeting, and thank you very much for being part of it.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.